The person now coming to the podium has been with us at our conventions since the 1970s. And what he has come to tell us each year has been a significant effort in changing the technological landscape for us, but he's also changed it for a great many other groups. The title of this topic is The Future of Technology for the Blind. It is a deceptively simple appearing topic, but the man to present it is not simple. He has complexity and imagination and heart and drive. It is a pleasure to welcome the President and Chief Executive Officer of KNFB Reading Technology, Ray Kurzweil.
Well, thank you so much for that very warm reception. This is my 33rd NFB convention. And I will talk about the future of technology for the blind, but a large part of that has nothing to do with blindness, because we're already at a point where there isn't really much difference between being blind and being sighted, especially if you take advantage of all the resources of the National Federation of the Blind. So some of the things that I want to talk about, which is, for example, extending human longevity, apply to everyone. But there's still some challenges in terms of technology for the blind, which I look forward to working with Dr. Maurer and the National Federation of the Blind on, so I want to comment on that. Michael May said there's always a way, and that really has been the philosophy of my life, in that invariably all of us encounter challenges along the way, and there's always a way to overcome them if you apply the power of human ideas, and you can find those ideas and then apply them to solving really any challenge, and I think this organization is a very good example of that. And there are some examples in my life. 25 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I tried the standard medical approach that actually made things worse. And so I studied the scientific literature, came up with a unique approach, overcame my diabetes. I've been free of any symptoms of it for 25 years. And wrote a best-selling health book about that. And had another health challenge, which was middle age. and I think I've done a reasonable job with that also. 35 years ago, I'd come up with a technique that could recognize printed letters in any type font, so-called OmniFont optical character recognition. And it was kind of a solution in search of a problem. We didn't really know what it might be good for. And happened to sit next to a blind guy in a plane, and he was explaining to me how blindness is really not a handicap. It's the first time I had heard that philosophy, and he's telling me how he travels around the world representing his company, and he was doing that now. But then he said, yeah, actually, there is one handicap, which is access to ordinary printed material. And sure, there's Braille and talking books, and Braille is very important, but reading topical literature like the latest inner office memo and journal articles and so on, which are not translated quickly into other forms, it would be great if he had some means of doing that, some machine that could actually read for him. And so that was a challenge. We thought that, yes, applying this OmniFont OCR could help solve that problem, but there were two other technologies needed that time. There were no flatbed scanners then, and there was no speech synthesizers, so we had to develop those technologies as well. But applying the philosophy that Michael May articulated, that there's always a way, we figured that we could overcome those challenges. But part of the way that we found was to meet Jim Gashel and Dr. Jernigan and the National Federation of the Blind and forge a partnership. And without that, partnership and that cooperative relationship, we never would have come out with the Kurzweil reading machine. We worked very closely with a team of engineers and scientists from the NFB, headed by Mike Kingston, whom I think is here. And there were many specific issues of what features a reading machine for the blind would need and how it would need to work and what performance levels were required and testing the device and making sure it actually worked with real blind users that we never would have accomplished otherwise. So working together in 1976, we came out with the Kurzweil reading machine, and it was about the size of this podium, about the size of a washing machine. It cost $50,000. Didn't read everything, but it did read some things. And so it found its way into libraries and books, libraries and schools and other institutions. Few individuals, like Stevie Wonder, who's a close friend of Michael May, did acquire them as well. And over the years, they've gotten smaller and smaller. But in 2002, it was still a device that was on your desk, so you had to bring printed material back to your desk to read it. And there's a lot of things that you would like to read as you go through the day that you can't bring back to your desk, like signs on the wall, the bank ATM display, handouts at meetings like this. You could bring the menu from a restaurant back to your desk, but you'd really rather read it in the restaurant. And since I gave a lot of speeches at conferences like this one and at other forums on the future of technology for different handicaps, I was talking through the late 1990s about how someday a blind person would be able to take a device out of their pocket and read all the printed material as they go through the day. And in fact, that was a prediction I made in 1976, that within a few decades, this washing machine-sized device would be something that would fit in your pocket. But that seemed fairly ridiculous back in 1976. And this has been another hat that I've worn, which is making predictions about the future. And the common wisdom is you can't predict the future. But it turns out that certain aspects of information technology, and by information technology I mean computers and communication devices, but it's actually not just limited to that. I'll talk more about that later. It also applies to aspects of our health, for example. But certain measurements of information technology turn out to be very predictable. For example, there's been exponential growth in the power of computers for the same cost that goes back to the 1890s census. And the size of technology has also shrunk at a very predictable rate. According to my models, it's 100 in 3D volume per decade, which is a factor of 100,000 in 25 years. So if you apply those models to the reading machine, you would get, in 2008, a pocket-sized device. So I had a conversation with Dr. Maurer in 2002, and he said, Ray, you've been talking about a pocket-sized reading machine for many years. When do you think this is going to be feasible? And I said, well, according to our models, the requisite digital camera technology, pocket computer technology, cell phone technology will be available in 6 years, 2008, second quarter to be exact. And he said, okay, that's the hardware. How long will the software take? And I said, well, it'll take about 6 years to develop. He said, okay, let's get started. And so we forged another partnership, just like we had for the original Kurzweil reading machine, to develop the first pocket-sized reading machine for the blind. And sure enough, second quarter of this year, this spring of 2008, cell phones came out that were powerful enough to support this application. And a little bit to my surprise, we actually got the software done on time, and we announced the KNFB reader this year. And And there's now about 1,000 blind guys and gals going around taking pictures of handouts at meetings like this one, signs on the wall, menus, and reading them. And in many ways, it works better than sight, because Jim Gashel, for example, can read the menu in the dark. And I can also, because I bring a reader with me for just those circumstances. So we've added a few features, which I'm going to demonstrate now, but first I'll demonstrate this reading. I have a few documents from the conference here, but I'll read this one. Is this on? Okay.
Settings loaded. Ready. Viewfinder on. Taking picture.
And it does have an elaborate field of view report.
Processing picture and books, articles and labels format.
Which will give you feedback if you've cut off
camera
part of the page.
Camera 0 degrees clockwise relative to the page.
It'll rotate the image.
Presidential Report 2008, an address delivered by Mark Moore, National Federation of the Blind, Dallas, Texas, July 2, 2008. During the past year, the National Federation of the Blind has expanded its programs and increased its innovative activity to levels never before reached. The difference between our organization and...
Okay.
Canceling, please. Processing canceled.
So it now reads in seven languages, so I'll demonstrate that.
Ready. Ready. Viewfinder on. Taking picture. Pre-processing picture and books, articles and labels format. Camera is 1 degree counterclockwise relative to the page.
France, an article de Wikipedia, I Encyclopedia Libre, La France, Ula R6, Publique France, eyes.
Right, let me...
Cancel. Yeah. Settings loaded.
Let me try that again.
Ready. Viewfinder on. Taking picture. Pre-processing picture and books, articles and labels format. Camera is 1 degree counterclockwise relative to the page.
France. Un article de Wikipédia, Encyclopédie Libre. La France, ou la République française, pour les usages officiels, est un pays dont la métropole se situe en Europe de l'Ouest et qui inclut des territoires à divers endroits du globe. La France est membre de l'Union européenne. De tout.
Okay. Canceling. Please wait. Processing canceled. Translation. On.
So another feature is it will translate
Ready.
From any of those languages.
France. From Wikipedia. Free Encyclopedia. France, or the French Republic for official purposes, is a country whose city is located in Western Europe, which includes territories at various places in the globe. France is a member of the European Union of all the major...
Ready.
So that was a real-time translation of this French document. So we now have the capability of translating between any of the seven languages. And some of the other features, this phone, by the way, also has GPS navigation, and you can get a screen reader that will read that out for the blind. Email, web, MP3 player, it's also a phone. It has a 5-megapixel camera, it's a good quality camera, and all of that has a screen reader so that it can be used. We've also developed indoor navigation, so it can recognize hallways. You just train it on the hallway, and it can tell you where you are inside. We have technology which we'll be putting in a future version that does object recognition, so you can train it on a Tylenol bottle, for example, or a cup without having to actually read the print on the object. It can recognize faces if you train it on them, which might go part of the way towards Michael May's objective of recognizing people. And we're developing technology for untrained recognition, so it can recognize objects without training, so that'll be enable us to provide some description of pictures and scenes, so you can just point it in a room. And this is in the future, but I would say a couple years from now, you'll be able to point it in a room and have it describe what's in the room. You know, there's three people, there's a woman sitting on a chair, that's your ex-wife on the sofa. And these devices are getting smaller. It's about a 5,000-to-1 reduction in size from the first reading machine. So it's already fits comfortably in your shirt pocket, but ultimately we'll put them, say, in a pair of glasses or something you can clip on your lapel or even put on your back and read in all directions. There's no reason to limit this to just the things that sighted people can do. So you'll be able to read in all directions. When I went to MIT in 1975, MIT was so advanced it actually had its own... I'm sorry, 1965. MIT was so advanced and it actually had its own computer, and that's one of the reasons I went there. And it took up half a building. It was shared by all thousands of us, professors and students. And the computer in your cell phone today, like this cell phone that I have right here, is a million times smaller than that computer shared by everyone at MIT back in 1965, a million times less expensive, and 1,000 times more powerful. So that's a billion-fold increase in price performance, billion-fold increase in the amount of computation per dollar as compared to 40 years ago. And even the speed of this exponential progression is speeding up. So we'll make another billion-fold increase in price performance in the next 25 years. And as I mentioned, shrink the size of these technologies 100,000-fold. And ultimately, this is going to affect all of our lives. We are now understanding biology as a set of information processes. Basically, we have outdated software running in our bodies. We have 23,000 little software programs called genes that evolved thousands of years ago. For example, one software program is called the fat insulin receptor gene. Basically, it says, hold on to every calorie because the next hunting season may not work out so well. And that was a great idea 1,000 years ago. It's not such a great idea today in an era of abundance. It underlies an epidemic of obesity. What would happen if we turn that off? Well, we actually have a new technology called RNA interference that can turn off selected genes. So this was tried at the Joslin Diabetes Center in animals. These animals ate ravenously, and yet they remained slim, and they didn't get diabetes, they didn't get heart disease, they lived 20% longer, they got the health benefits of caloric restriction while doing the opposite, and there's several pharmaceutical companies rushing to bring fat insulin receptor gene inhibitors to the human market. And that's just one of the 23,000 genes we'd like to tinker with. There's actually 1,000 drugs in the development pipeline using RNA interference to turn genes off, or new forms of gene therapy to add new genes, to promote health, turn off the genes that promote disease and aging, and generally extend our longevity. And the interesting point is that now that health and biology has become an information technology, it's subject to what I call the law of accelerating returns, this exponential growth of information technology. So these technologies will be 1,000 times more capable in 10 years, a million times more capable in 20 years. And according to my models, in 15 years from now, We'll be adding more than a year every year, not just to infant life expectancy, but to your remaining life expectancy. So as you go forward a year, your life expectancy will move on away from you. So if you can hang in there for another 15 years, we may get to see the remarkable century ahead. And all of these different aspects of information technology, what we can do in terms of devices for the disabled, what we can do in terms of extending human longevity and health, are going to expand dramatically. If we go out 25 years, consider we went from a building-sized computer to something that fits in your shirt pocket in 40 years. And in 25 years, it'll shrink again by a factor of 100,000. So this will then become the size of a blood cell and will be extremely inexpensive. It'll improve a billion-fold in price performance. So we will have, and this will be very routine, millions of blood cell-sized devices going in our bloodstream, keeping us healthy from inside. If that sounds very futuristic, I'd point out that there's already dozens of experiments of doing this with the first generation of blood cell-sized devices in animals. One scientist cured type 1 diabetes in rats with a blood cell-sized device that lets insulin out in a controlled fashion. At MIT, they have a blood cell-sized device that can detect cancer cells and latch onto them and destroy them. So these are now experimental, but they're moving quite rapidly. If you've got 25 years, it'll be very routine to have millions of these devices in your bloodstream, destroying cancer cells, destroying viruses and bacteria and other pathogens, removing debris, correcting DNA errors, and generally keeping us healthy at the molecular and cellular level. They'll go inside our brains and interact with our biological neurons. That's something that's, in fact, already been demonstrated. If you have Parkinson's disease today, you can have a device, not blood cell size yet, pea size, put inside your brain that replaces the biological neurons destroyed by Parkinson's disease. And the latest generation of this FDA-approved neural implant actually allows you to download new software to the computer inside your brain from outside the patient. So that's today. Apply this billion-fold increase in price performance and this 100,000-fold decrease in size of what we can do today, and the idea of sending these through the bloodstream non-invasively without surgery to really expand all of our cognitive abilities becomes quite manifest. So we will have new ways of getting information into the brain that go beyond the normal senses. So all of us will benefit. I mean, sight itself will be obsolete, really. There'll be new, better, faster ways of getting information in our brains. All of our brains will be on the internet. What's the best way to apply this technology for the blind? Well, that's a challenging question and one that I'm not equipped to answer by myself, and it's a good thing that we have the National Federation of the Blind to guide us on how to apply these increasingly powerful, exponentially expanding technologies to benefit the blind and to benefit all of us. And I look forward to working with all of you in the years and decades ahead on doing just that. Thank you.
Thank you.